This episode of The Girlfriend Bracket is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. With free shipping on orders of $100 or more, a 25% buy list bonus, and their ever-popular customer rewards program, CoolStuffInc is the store for all of your Magic the Gathering needs. Hey everybody, this is episode number 61 of the Girlfriend Bracket. 61, right?
Yep.
Okay, just making sure. They start to blend into each other just after doing this for a while. So I know that I hogged up the last episode of my big announcement, and I really think we should let Hallie make her big announcement now. Is there something you want to tell the listeners?
No, what is this about?
You're on Snapchat now.
I am on Snapchat now. I have no idea. I'm barely on Snapchat. I don't know how to use it yet.
I added you as a friend, Hallie, so it's okay.
Okay, you'll have to give me a tutorial at some point.
Okay.
You have one of the most beautiful dogs in the world. You just post pictures of your dog and then come up with like a quirky little caption underneath it, which I'm sure you can do, and then just share it with the world because everybody loves Kirby.
Mm-hmm. That's true. I would love to do that if I could figure out like how to actually work the thing, but baby steps, I guess.
I think Kirby needs his own Snapchat.
Oh.
Probably, yeah. Independently of me.
Oh, man. I have a friend on Facebook whose dog, I'm not really sure the specifics, but she took a picture of her dog, and somehow her dog got picked up by like a casting group or something. And
holy
so her
crap.
Dog has like its own Facebook group now, and her dog is like on the way.
Wow.
That's awesome.
And she's like getting into politics, and people are like, that's really cute, girl. We're here for your dog. And it's just kind of taken on a life of its own. And so that could be Kirby, or that could be Watson.
Mm-hmm. Or they could be like a little duo, like a superhero team.
I mean,
they could star in their own movie.
You know, the whole point of doing the show was to catapult you guys into the spotlight, but really, it's just about the dogs. Like,
really? How can you resist those ears?
I saw that picture that you posted today when you were doing, like, housework or garage work.
Yeah, with Watson and his little gas mask.
You put a gas mask on your dog, and I don't even like dogs, and I was like, that is so freaking cute.
And he just sat there for it. I was like, Watson, you gotta stay. I gotta take a picture. And he just sat there and was like, it's no big. I got this.
I've actually really been enjoying Snapchat, but the one problem, I guess you could say, is that something about Snapchat just makes me lose all of my inhibitions. Like, I've just been having some very interesting conversations with people that I would normally not have, and just been taking pictures of everything and just be like, I'm going to post this, and be like, should I post this? Who cares? And just, you know, posting everything under the sun and sending messages and captions. And, you know, I don't feel like I have these walls like I do when I'm on Twitter or on Facebook. I just feel like I can say anything, and I really need someone to kind of like rein me in to be like, you probably shouldn't have sent that picture because, it's going to disappear in 5 seconds. Okay, you're fine. But it's kind of scandalous.
Unless someone takes a picture of it.
Right.
But then it tells you, it's like, you took a picture of so-and-so's snap.
I made that mistake the other day. I was talking to somebody who had been like swimming or something, and they were like, hey, baby. And I was like, oh, sweet, screenshot. And then I was like, oh. And then there was the big alert, and he was like, why did you screenshot that? And I was like,
no reason.
I'm going to buy those trunks for a friend. I had no idea. I told you when you screenshot it. So that's a bad deal. Right. Our woman of excellence this week is a young lady named Vanessa Martin. Vanessa recently broke through. She made her cosplay debut as Nahiri, and was recently taken under her wing by Christine Sprinkle. And they were at GP Pittsburgh this past weekend and posted some hilarious pictures of them as Nahiri and Avison. They did one set that were like prom photos, which were really funny. And Christine is certainly making it a point to, you know, help Vanessa come out of her shell and help her do more cosplay. And I think she's certainly on her way. So if you want to support Vanessa, you can find her on Twitter at Vanessa Lee Cos, which is VanessaLeighCos. She really does Nahiri well. Like, I'd never seen anybody do this before. And I'm anxious to see what she comes up with next. This week, we had some pretty big things happen to us. I want to talk about yours first, Chris, because you had kind of hinted about this project that you were working on, and it had been kind of brewing for a while, and then you unveiled it to the world, and everybody loved it.
Yeah, I guess so. I definitely was not expecting that, I guess. I decided to put together a blog. It had been an idea for probably about 6 months, and I just kind of wanted to talk about my experiences playing Magic, and especially in relation to losing quite a bit, because it was something that I was really struggling with. And I wanted to bring somewhat of a different perspective to the game. A lot of content that we read is focused on strategies for winning, deck building, you know, metagame breakdowns, and I thought that it would be a good idea to talk about dealing with, like, the mental stress of losing, or how to reevaluate yourself, and just document a journey to performing better, and hope to talk about what I'm learning and different people that I encounter playing the game. So I guess we'll see what comes of it, but I guess I was just overwhelmed with the response. Like, I figured, you know, our listeners would be like, oh, cool, Chris wrote a thing, and, like, go check it out. And I guess I was just really pleased to see that people responded very positively to it.
What do you think it was about the blog post that people related to? Because it really seemed to transcend, like, even our listeners. Like, there were people liking it and retweeting it who, you know, either don't follow all of us or who don't follow our work, and yet they still, you know, enjoyed your post and felt the need to share it. So what do you think really brought everybody together?
I think that maybe people can just relate to being in that position. You know, maybe they have gone through, like, a really bad losing streak, or they, you know, are in a position where they want to reevaluate how they're handling, you know, playing the game in general, or trying to deal with just rough times in the game. And I think that everyone can say at one point they've had a slump, whether or not they've always been very good or if they're just trying to get better. I mean, I actually wanted to really recommend to have my friend Kevin read the blog post that I wrote, because he's really struggling right now with losing, and he just wants to be good, and we're all trying to tell him, like, that just doesn't happen. Like, unless you're some kind of savant, like, you're just not going to naturally be good at Magic, and it takes a lot of losing, you know, to get there. I actually had someone, and I won't say who it was, but someone at my game store made a joke, in jest, of course, but to say something about, like, do you want to play cards that are good, or do you want to lose all the time like Chris Schultz? And I was like, what? And this was just this...
Whoa.
Yeah, and this was just this past weekend. And, like, I tried not to take it poorly, and I really didn't, but it was just kind of, like, a weird... Just, like, a weird thing. It's weird to notice your own shortcomings, but to have someone else maybe say it is kind of, like, another story. But then I thought about it, and it's like, well, when you lose a lot, you tend to learn more things, and you tend to get better. And I think anyone that is, you know, especially good at Magic at this point in their life, they had to get through some losses to get there. And, you know, that's exactly what I told this person. I said, well, I'd rather lose a lot and get better than not get better at all. So, you know, sometimes it's just going to take a lot of losses or a lot of, you know, soul searching, I think, to find your way through Magic. Everyone has different goals in mind, different things that they want. And, like, for me, getting on the Pro Tour just isn't something that I really care about. I think at one point in time, I was really, like, gung-ho about, oh, I want to be good, and I want to win an opener, I want to win a GP. And if those things happen, I mean, that's cool and all. Like, I'm not going to be like, no, I would rather not have money or, you know, you know, personal accomplishment. But it's just, I don't know. It's just not my jam. Like, I feel like there's a lot of stress involved in that. And I already have enough of that from, you know, my personal life and from my job. I don't want Magic to be too stressful. I want it to be my escape, my, you know, something that's a pleasure of mine. And I don't want it to just start weighing down on me, because then it takes the fun out of it, and then I feel like I'm just spending money to be stressed out and unhappy, and I don't want that at all. So yeah, I kind of had to reevaluate all my magical thinkings so that I could enjoy the game again.
Yeah, I think it goes back to, you know, we talked about this on the show before, but the fact that we do kind of exist in an echo chamber. You know, we go to events quite frequently. You know, we are surrounded by people who want to be good and who have, you know, kind of expert opinions. And we look around and we just assume that everybody wants that. And we assume that everybody is doing that. You know, but then you have conversations with people and you hear people say, this will be my first GP, or this will be my first open. And you're like, really? You're like, you've never never? You don't want to go? And they're like, no, it's not really my thing. And, you know, we just tend to forget that there are people different than us. And, you know, there are some people who can't necessarily afford the cards that we can, or who want the same things that we do. But when it's all you're surrounded by, like in your immediate circle, you tend to forget that there's a really big world out there. And actually, I think that the world, I think the majority of people fall into that camp. You know, I think the majority of people are not trying to get on the pro tour. They're perfectly fine being weekend warriors. They're perfectly fine, you know, playing formats like Pauper and Commander. And so, but again, that's something we don't notice because we're surrounded by pros and spikes and articles and podcasts. And, you know, we really just tend to forget that the majority of the audience, I think, is just the kitchen table Magic player or just the casual player.
Mm-hmm. I even met some people over the weekend that they're like, well, you know, we'd like to go to FNM, but we don't want to deal with, you know, really spiky players. Like, we just want to have fun, or we want to play with decks that aren't necessarily legal, but they have cards that we like. And I can see their side of it. At the same time, though, I'm like, no, I want all the decks to be legal, and I just want to, like, crush people's faces off. Because, I mean, that can be fun. But then, you know, there's the other aspect of things where you just want to cast cards and be like, we. So I can understand that.
Yeah. Hallie and Katie, can you relate to what Chris is talking about in her post?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think you touched on something really important, Chris, when you said that, you know, it's important to have personal goals. You know, it's not always about going to the Pro Tour for everyone. Like, if you want to, I don't know, if you want to win an opener, you want to win a GP, that's cool. But, you know, there are people whose personal goal is just to get better at deck building, or to, you know, even to just win their FNM. So I think what you said is relatable to all kinds of people. Definitely, you know, like Erin was saying, the majority of people, I think, fall into that category.
Yeah, and I think for me, I'm kind of trying to accept the fact that while I'm in vet school, I won't be able to have enough time to play Magic the way I used to be able to, you know, grind every weekend at pre-TQs and travel for GPs and Opens. And you know, part of that comes along with, if I'm just going to be playing FNMs or, you know, drafting on a Tuesday or whatever it may be, I think that I'm going to have to kind of reevaluate the way Chris was talking about in her blog post and just learn to enjoy the game for the game and not for the competitive aspect for it, because there's not enough time in my day to be able to play and keep up with Standard and rotations and all of that. So I'm going to try and get better at drafting and just kind of take it a little bit more casually and hopefully enjoy the game again.
Yeah, I related to the part in your blog, Chris, where you talked about if you're not going to win at an event or you're not going to do well at an event, there were certain things that you wanted to at least be able to say that you did or to say that you took away from it. And you said, you know, I want to promote my show and promote other people's shows and be a positive, you know, influence in the community. And then you said that you wanted to learn something. And that was a really big thing for me, because we were on hiatus when this happened, but we went to an open in Indianapolis. I've never told this story on the air. Can I tell you the story real quick?
Yeah.
Okay. So so we went to an open, and I owe two drop. I was just so frustrated. I was so over it, and I dropped in, like, dramatic fashion. And I call my friend Emma Handy, and I text her, and I was just like, I'm done. I'm over this. I'm miserable. And she's like, you get your ass back in there. She's like, and you play. She's like, you learn something. And I was like, I have nothing to learn. I played this deck inside and out. This deck is bullshit. And she was like, Erin, she's like, the next side event doesn't even fire for another 2 hours. She's like, you get back in there. I was like, they're not going to let me back in. She's like, you beg them to let you back in. She's like, but you are not going to leave until you've learned something. And so I was like that kid where I was like, oh, fine. So I went stomping up to the table. And I was like, do you guys have a form for, like, people that drop and didn't want to drop? Like, they didn't mean it. And the judge is like, yep, we do. And so he slides this sheet over. And it's, like, this list of, like, shame. And you have to, you know, put your name on it. You have to put that you're either dropping or that you're coming back. And so I get back in the event. And I stomp over. I'm like, this is stupid. I was stupid. Everything's stupid. And I played. And I ended up winning the next four. So I went from 0-2 to 4-2. And I was like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. And then I finished the day at 5-4, which was a big deal for me considering where I came from. But I did what Emma said, and I learned something. And I was like, you know what? This Death and Taxes matchup, I learned that I can get through Thalia's tax with this. Or I learned that I can do this with Pentad Prism. And so that's become my new thing, is can I at least say that I learned something from the experience? Can I say that I finally figured out how to sideboard against a certain matchup? Or can I say that I finally figured out how to play around a certain kind of sideboard hate? And if I can at least say that I've learned something, then that's become my new thing to say that the whole experience was worthwhile. And so that really stuck out to me when you brought that up, because I remember Emma's text message of, you get your ass back in there and you learn something. And me just going, and she was right. Emma was totally right. And that's why I love her.
She was. And, you know, that's one of the things that I thought about when I was writing the article, is she's very much like about that. Even in her interview this past weekend, like, she talks about, you know, learning something, you know, how she's, you know, on the grind. She wants to get better, and she's just there to enjoy herself and, you know, learn, you know, the game better. And that's one reason I really dig her and think that she's so genuine and awesome.
Well, I think it also comes down to that people naturally equate getting better with winning. And they say, if I'm not winning, then I'm not getting better. And it's like, yeah, but if you, you know, like you said, Chris, you learn a lot from losing. Mm-hmm. And you can be losing and still be gaining experience, gaining knowledge that will eventually translate into wins. And I think that really linear kind of way of thinking of, you know, well, all these wins mean I haven't learned anything and I haven't become better through this experience. I think that really needs to change too, because people can be very results oriented. Mm-hmm. And if you're taking away things from each experience, then little by little you are getting better, and it does boil down to baby steps. And I think that's something people need to realize, is it's not done in like leaps and bounds. You know, there are some people that come out of the gate really strong and start top eighting things and top 32ing, and God bless them, but for the most part it's like incremental gains until finally you just have those levels up, that level up. And I think you, again, with your post, you just hit it all on the head.
Thanks.
Yeah. Hallie, you also did something big this weekend. You did coverage.
I did, yeah.
I watched your coverage. Tell us how it went.
So I did coverage of a modern 1K at Card Kingdom, or a modern 1K-ish, as they referred to it. Basically, it's a 0.8K until they get 55 or more people registered, at which point it becomes a 1K. But there were 65 or, I think, 66 players, so it was an actual 1K. We did coverage. There were 7 rounds and a cut to top 8, so it was a long day. I just did the Swiss, and then some other folks filled in for me for the top 8. And it was super nerve-wracking at first. I kind of got thrown into the deep end and found myself commentating a match of Blue-Red Geist versus Blue-Red Fairies.
Yeah, I saw that
And I'm going to be honest with you, when that match was going on, I was like frantically looking up the oracle text of Scion of Una, because I could not remember it for the life of me. So I was really nervous at first, but as the day went on, I got more and more comfortable, and there were more and more matchups that I knew and could, you know, offer insight on. And it ended up going really well, and I thought, you know, my commentating partner Casey and I, you know, played off each other pretty well, and I just thought it was a great experience, and I would be really happy to do it again.
Yeah, I caught the beginning of it. I think Chris was in the chat, too.
Yeah.
She sent me a goofy message. She goes, are you the Aaron Campbell? And I was like, I have no idea who this woman is. Yeah, we caught the beginning of it when you guys were having some sound issues, and we were trying to let you know the sound's working. But you looked great. I could see the chemistry was there once the sound came on. And it's funny, because I know you've certainly excelled at written coverage, but I wasn't sure, you know, what your thoughts or feelings were on being behind the camera. And so you think it's something you'd like to do again? Do you think if you had to choose between doing more camera or written, you'd want to do more of that?
I mean, I really enjoy both for different reasons. Mm-hmm. I really excel at written coverage, and I definitely have a lot to learn when it comes to doing on camera or video coverage, I guess. I'm still not great in front of a camera, and that's something that I'm trying to work on, and that's why, you know, I reached out to Card Kingdom and said, hey, can I help out with this? But you know, it's definitely another aspect of something that I enjoy doing, and I think there can be room for both.
Well, you could also get more comfortable in front of a camera by streaming more.
Yeah, I know. I've been having some issues with my stream, and that's a story for another time.
Okay.
But I will be streaming again soon, I promise. It's just something that I've had to work through.
Yeah, because I know you and Katie both like have dipped your toe in a little bit and been very well received. Like, I know I've enjoyed both of your streams, and I know other people have too, and then just when they were getting a taste of it, you guys pulled back a little bit, and it's like, you know, people want to see you. And so, you know, when life does you know, line up to a point where you can do that, there are definitely people waiting for you. So, Katie, speaking of you, I read an article the other day about judges that made me think of you. Our friend Max Kahn, who we know from Illinois, he started writing for Nerd Rage Gaming. They have a blog now at articles.nerdragegaming.com. And he wrote an article called Four Misconceptions About Judging. He's an L2 judge. And I was curious if you had read this and if you felt any of these things. Because he said that there are these stereotypes that people have of judges, you know, or they think they know what judges do or how they operate. And he's kind of telling you, y'all really don't. And he says, misconception number one, he says, judges get information before players. And he was implying that some people think that when spoiler season happens, there's this stereotype that you guys get information before everybody else. And you know either what cards do or you know what the rules do before anybody else. And that's kind of not fair. And then he says, misconception number two is answering a judge call is easy. It's pretty self-explanatory, and you're already like, no. Misconception number three, judging is not hard work. I'm not even a judge, and I can tell you it's hard work. And then misconception number four, judges don't play magic. Have you had to deal with any of these misconceptions, Katie?
I definitely have. The information, getting it early, comes up a lot, especially around spoiler season. You walk into F&M, everybody's like, how does this card work if you do this and this and this all in this fancy cube with this commander deck on the side? And you're just like, what? And, you know, sometimes we have a good guess at things, but we're really not supposed to say, because we don't want to lead anybody astray before the card comes out and surprise it works a different way than we thought. But the answering a judge call is easy is something I think players forget when they're making the judge call. I've definitely had players who are watching who afterwards have said, like, I think you handled that really well. But I think when somebody calls a judge, it's like they expect the world from you, and you're like, I'm just a human being. And every time I take a break from judging and I come back, my first event is super nerve-wracking. I'm like, what if I don't remember how this card works? What if I need to look it up? What if I take 6 minutes and it's really only supposed to take 30 seconds? So it's definitely something, you know. Some judges have a little bit of problem, like, communicating very clearly. You know, some judges just get super nervous. Some forget the IPG easily. Whatever it may be, answering a judge call is sometimes easy. When they're like, I need Oracle text, you're like, okay, I got that one on lock. But that's definitely something that I still struggle with, I guess. I think everybody knows judging is hard work. I guess some people see judges sitting down and they're like, oh, you just get to sit down and watch Magic all day. And it's like, oh, no, you put in a lot of miles. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think a lot of players are starting to, especially in the last year or two, you know, really respect judges and thank them for what they're doing. And I think it's becoming a bigger thing that's being seen, like, you know, with all the judge controversy in the last year or so, I think people are really recognizing what judges put into this program and that they're really needed to run all of these events. So I hope that these misconceptions aren't misconceptions any longer, but you can always just politely be like, hey, that's not actually how that works. We do work really hard. Yeah, I did enjoy this article, and I hope that a lot of people read it, because it's pretty short, it's succinct, and I think it clears up a lot of things that players might have questions about.
Yeah, I was particularly fascinated by number two. So Max talks about his process when he's answering a judge call, and he literally broke it down into like A and B. So he says, step one, he gets the call. So somebody raises their hand and says, judge. And then he says, 1.5, as I walk to the table, I look at the round timer and note how much time is left in the round. And so that he knows how much of a time extension to give them. And then he says, number two, he will walk up to the table on the player's side who called the judge. And then, so he determines his positioning, so that's step two. And then step three is figuring out the problem, which is pretty meaty. And then step four is assessing the situation, giving a ruling. For A, the ruling gets appealed. For B, regardless of the appeal, you have to give the time extension. And then he hasn't even touched on, like, reading body language, determining if somebody's lying, the type of penalties to give, downgrades or upgrades, what happens during an appeal. So there's so many steps that go into this that he could have easily just expanded on. And that's just a judge call. That's what the viewer, the person watching this go down, would just say, oh, a judge call's happening, not knowing that there's all these really intricate steps to it. And I had no idea myself. myself. Like, I just assumed that, you know, they rush over, they squat down, they have a chat with you. I didn't know that there was so much to this.
Yeah, and it definitely gets more complex when the players are starting to get upset, especially if one's upset at the other player. They're not, like, upset at themselves or whatever, but they're, like, really mad at the other person. It takes a lot of kind of mediating and navigating to try and make everybody calm down, because you don't want to give a ruling and be like, yeah, you lost the game, go on to the next game, and then have that person be pissed off the whole game when they're, like, trying to play their opponent, and their opponent's just like, oh god, you're so angry. So it's definitely a very, like, communication intensive job, and I don't think people realize a lot of all of that background that goes into it. Just like we said, reading people's body language, making sure they're not overly upset at their opponent, seeing if you need to hang around and make sure that everybody's nice to each other afterward. A lot of that can be a very touchy, feely thing that's not very easy to teach to other judges. So when you're, like, raising a little level one judge and you're just like, hey, when the people get mad at each other, don't let them be mean to each other. It's something you kind of got to learn on the job, how to feel out a situation. So there's definitely a lot that goes into it.
I think people also don't misconceive the fact that your job basically is customer service too. Like you just said, mm-hmm. It's like you want to make sure that you are delivering these rulings while still, you know, keeping everybody in good spirits. And there's a way to say, you know, I need to give this to you. And then you can just be like, well, girl, bye, you know, and you can't do that. And you have to, it is like if you were working across from a cash register or if you were a server, and you do have to, you know, communicate well and make sure that you're taking the customer's feelings in account almost.
Yeah, for sure. You play a lot of different roles as a judge, and, you know, making your announcements at the beginning. Not everybody's very good at public speaking, or organizing a crowd at a GP when you're doing 32-player side events. You have to be loud the whole day. Mm-hmm. You deal with a lot of people in a very fast-paced environment. So you play a lot of different roles, and they all have slightly different personality traits that you need to pull on to be able to do them well.
Mm-hmm. Chris, I know you and I have talked about you wanting to be a judge, and I know that you made a little binder and you were studying for a little while and you got a little sidetracked. You know, does all of this kind of scare you off from judging, or does it make you even more interested in doing it? Like, can you handle all this?
I think I would be fine. It's just a matter of I have a tendency to, when presented with a difficult situation lately and, like, a customer service issue, I tend to just be, like, no nonsense about a lot of things, and, like, it's not, like, typical me. Like, if I was, like, talking to two friends that weren't getting along, I'd be like, okay, well, you know, Susie feels this way and Tom feels this way, and this is how we should work this out. Instead, like, because I'm trying to get, like, straight into the point, and I'm just doing my job and I'm doing it the way I was trained, like, all the warm fuzzies are gone. And I'm kind of just like, I'm sorry, you know, this is how it is, you know, I can't help you, or, you know, this is just, you know, the way things are. So I feel like in order to be a good judge, I'd have to get a little bit of the warm fuzzies back to be like, to be like, okay, we have to be sensitive because Tommy's a little upset about this ruling or something. You know what I mean? So I think I could do it. I would just have to, like, dial back the, like, hard assness or something that I've discovered over time. But I still am very interested in it. I think it was, like, last weekend or the weekend before, I was like, oh, I should probably dig out all my stuff and I should really look at it again, because that's what I would do on my breaks at work, or if I was bored at work, I would just, like, go through and highlight stuff in my binder with all the comprehensive rules and other stuff. And I went through and highlighted a lot of the examples in there because I'm like, I need to have an example to tell me how this works, because sometimes it's just like, you know, insert tab A into slot B and all that stuff. It's like, okay, well, how do we get to C? And to have an actual example is a little easier to understand, to get the actual rules part down. I think the customer service stuff I could handle pretty well. The rules thing, I definitely would need to make sure that's, like, embedded in my brain meats, and that if I need to, you know, give, you know, a ruling or Oracle text or something like that, that I'm like Johnny on the spot about it. And I still want to do it. Like, and I feel very thankful to, you know, have many resources available, you know, depending on the situation, like if I had a question or if I wanted to get more help. And I just want to say, like, I really am thankful for the judge community, especially for being so open to people that want to be part of, you know, their community, to be like, hey, you want help, you want to study, you want to do this, I'm down. Like, I've never had a judge tell me, ah, Chris, you'll get there. Pat on the head, you know. No, everyone's been like, let me guide you in some way, and I'm like, cool. Like, I get to be like a Padawan, and that's pretty baller. So yeah, I'm into it.
Yeah, I think if I were a judge, I mean, I thought about judging too. Like, there were low points. Probably my lowest point was around GP Omaha 2 years ago. Like, I was just miserable. And this was before I discovered Ad Nauseam. And this was before I had Dredge built in Legacy and I knew what, like, real joy was. But I was just trying all these decks and just not finding anything I liked. And I was just miserable and I was losing and I was hating myself and I was playing formats I hated. And I thought about being a judge, but I was like, if I was a judge, I would probably be like you said, Chris, like the hardcore, like that scene in Charlie Angels when Lucy Liu has like the black leather outfit and the stick and she like storms through the, I would be me. Like, I would just answer your judge call and be like, how can I assist you? Like, I'd be very robotic and very firm, and that's not good. And, you know, so, you know, you mentioned being kind of loose and being like, wee, and I would be the opposite. It's like, please state the nature of the judge call. And I'd be like, I don't know what that card says. And it'd be like, you know, do you wish for me to refer to this in the language of its origin? And they're like, what? Like, are you a boar? Like, what are you doing? And so I would be too serious, but it would only come from a place of a respect. Like, I respect the judge program so much and I respect what judges do. And, you know, for me, I would want to just be, I would be so consumed with like doing it well and representing the team well that I don't think I could help but be serious. Like, I don't think I could just be kind of willy-nilly about it. Like, I would want to just do everything right and be on my P's and Q's, and I think that might be kind of my downfall.
Well, I think everybody has kind of their own judge style. Like, I see it when Brooke judges an event versus when I judge an event versus some of our other L2s. I'm kind of on the no-nonsense, like, line.
You?
Like,
Katie, no-nonsense meal.
I know.
No-nonsense meal. I love it.
I mean, I think the majority of the players like me, and I'm always, like, friendly, but as soon as somebody, like, starts to try and push the boundaries, I'm just like, nope, this is the way it is. You know, please get back to your game or whatever. Just because I've had so many weird experiences that nobody else seems to have had in my community with, like, you know, bad players or somebody yelling at me or somebody just being drunk in the middle of the event. And I'm like, you need to leave. And they're telling me they won't leave. Like, just all of these things where now I'm just like, nope, we're not going to get to that point. We're just going to move on. You're going to do what I say, or we're going to have an issue. So I try and keep it friendly, but there's definitely a no-nonsense aspect to it, because people will try and, you know, either walk all over you or be rude or whatever it is, and that's not necessary. So there's a fine line when you're judging of a lot of different things.
So the other day we took part in a community super league and the theme was Pauper. I actually sat this one out because I was exhausted and not feeling well, but I understand that Hallie did coverage and Chris and Katie, you piloted, and we won.
We won.
We won.
How did it go? Like, who wants to spill the behind the scenes dirt?
I mean, I could talk about Katie and I piloting. I definitely want to hear Hallie's side of things too, though, for sure.
Yeah, me too.
So Katie and I piloted Mono Black Control, and I was interested to see how we would pilot it differently, perhaps, than Gabby, because she was also on a similar deck. And I've never played this deck before, and so Katie's like, you know, do you think we should do this? And I'm like, yeah, I don't care. This sounds good. Oh, yeah, that'd be fun. Yeah, let's just, you know, corrupt the shit out of him or something like that, and just, like, you know, just going on. And I just remember, like, how excited I was at the end when we realized that we could flashback, what was it, Chainer's Edict, mm-hmm. so that we could get rid of his creature. And I'm yelling at Katie, I'm like, flashback the thing! Flashback the thing! And I'm just, like, screaming into the mic, and I'm like, oh, God, I hope Lee's not home upstairs. And I'm like, sorry, Lee. I'm, like, bouncing in my chair, like I was, like, 10 or something. But it just felt so good. I'm like, yes, we did it! This is awesome! But I thought deck was really cool. Definitely playing Pauper made me kind of get a little more excited about wanting to play it in paper. I built a deck last year that I've never used, and my LGS runs Pauper every Sunday, so I was like, I should probably really do that. But deck seems sick, and a lot of cards I'd never even thought about using before, and I don't know. It was a lot of fun, and I feel like, you know, it was just very, like, back-and-forth game. Like, I didn't feel like we were necessarily going to crush him or that he was going to crush us, and just kind of kept us guessing. And I felt that Katie and I piloted very well together. Like, I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, I definitely... This got me motivated. I might buy Pauper online.
Oh, wow.
I was really proud of myself that I didn't misclick at all, because me and Modo are good friends. And I was just like, Chris... Do I click it now?
Oh, yeah.
Do you think I click it now? Yeah. Like, can I block now? Or am I supposed to cast instance? It says cast instance. But what if I miss the block? Oh, God, Chris.
And I was just like,
If we miss it, we miss it. So it was a lot of fun. I kept hearing Athena laughing in the headphones. For people at home that don't know, Athena can talk to me and Chris, or she can talk to commentary. But we can't hear the commentary at all. So I just hear Athena laughing and laughing and laughing at the commentary. And I was like, God, I hope she's not laughing at me playing this deck. But it was definitely fun getting to play with cards I'd never even heard of before. I definitely have never followed Pauper. So when I was like looking up the deck lists and stuff online, I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. And it's nice that everything's kind of cheap. But overall, it was really good. The prof was fun to play against. The games were really close, and we had a blast piloting. And Chris almost blew my eardrums out at the end.
I was just, like, so excited. Like, I literally felt like, I don't know, the kid that always, like, loses at kickball or something. And, like, all of a sudden, like, you're just gonna, like, kick the ball, like, straight out of the park. And you're just like, this is our time. This is now. Or even, like, the Goonies speech at the end. And they're just like, you know... given that whole thing, and you just give that, like, power surge feeling, like, finally something's going to work out right, and, yeah, it was everything.
I've actually never seen The Goonies.
What?
What?
Me neither.
Your childhood was just not as awesome as mine was.
I definitely heard, like, a slow victory song, you know, like, when they're playing the song, and the person's, like, running around the bases in this kickball movie that we're
like
imagining.
Like, Chariots of Fire?
Yeah, and it's just like, duh, duh, and like the sun is shining, and all the people in the stands are like silently like, ah, ah, and I was like, yes, this is our time to shine.
Hallie, what was it like doing coverage of the professor? Because he can be eclectic.
It was hilarious. It was hilarious. So the professor posted in our Skype chat before the coverage even started that he wanted to know which of us was going to be doing commentary with us, because he wanted one of us to do the lead-in because he had something planned. And I was like, what does he have planned? This is interesting. So I get in the Skype call with him and Athena, and he's sitting in like a dark corner of his office where he records his videos. And there's like a lamp shining in his face, and he has... like what looks like a rope like around his neck, like this, I don't know, almost like jump rope, kind of like that rubber rope material, like around his neck. And I'm just like, oh God, what is this? And he was pretending to be possessed by Emrakul and growing tentacles like the whole time. And I was just like, I was trying to play along with it, but I was like trying really hard not to break, and it was very hard. He was, I don't know, some of the chat thought it was hilarious, some of the chat didn't really go for it, but I thought it was great. I thought, you know, seeing the professor turned up to 11 was just, like, awesome. But yeah, he was really fun to commentate with. Like, we were, you know, jibing each other back and forth a little bit. He was making fun of me for never having read Harry Potter. I was making fun of him for having mismatched basic lands. We found out we both have Jewish parents. Like, you know, I feel like we had a bonding moment. And it was really cool.
Speaking of bonding, did you see that they revealed the Bruna and Gisella hybrid today?
Oh, mm-hmm. Gosh.
And she's not Brunella, she is Brisella. which that's sounds a lot worse.
Oh, really? Yeah. I think Brunella.
I mean, Brunella.
I liked Brunella.
Yeah, we liked Brunella.
Oh, well, I'm just on the other side of the river on that one, I guess.
Well, Brunella you can kind of mock a lot better, but like Brisella just doesn't have the same like flair to it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like Priscilla, like
Brisella.
Right.
Yeah, you know, Brisella is more like draggy, I guess. Like it'd be a great drag name, like Brisella, but like Brunella's Brunella. You know, it's, you know, we can do more with that, I think. But
Munda.
Right. Munda. Right? Munda Brunella, and then there's the goblin grinder. What was it? Veda? Vara? That one we had the opportunity to build around.
Zada.
Zada's another one. My God, we could just recast the nanny, but with like magic characters. This is wonderful. So speaking of Pauper, Channel Fireball posted a tweet on their Twitter account asking if we think, should Pauper be a Grand Prix format? Like, what do you guys think? Like, do you think this is a good thing, and would you play it if there was a GP that was Pauper?
I think it definitely could be a Grand Prix format. I mean, I guess the things you have to be concerned about are like card availability and potential lack of interest in it, because it's not as popular as, say, Standard or Limited or maybe even Modern. But I do think it can be a GP format. I mean, there are plenty of GP formats that aren't, you know, Pro Tour formats that appeal to niche audiences. Like, there's Team Sealed. Team Sealed is my favorite GP format, and I love Team Sealed, and I dork out over it a lot. But, you know, it's not the kind of thing that you can play at a Pro Tour. So, you know, if Pauper could be, like, a one-off GP format, I would really go for that.
Yeah, I think it'd be fun. The only thing that I would be concerned about is whether or not it would have any effect on cost for the cards, because the whole thing is Pauper is, you know, it's what commons and uncommons and all that jazz, and, you know, having certain cards maybe go up in price. I mean, I think in our Mono Black Control deck, probably the most expensive card was like Wobbliet or whatever, and I just am concerned about that aspect of it. But I think it'd be fun because, you know, a lot of cards that perhaps people may have scoffed at some point in time, you know, are allowed to shine in a Pauper. Perhaps, what was it? Meandering, what was it? The tortoise that came back and was like all dead that we all made fun of, that had the bad real estate on its back.
Oh, the Wandering Tomb Shell?
Yeah, Wandering Tomb Shell. Perhaps Wandering Tomb Shell gets some love. You know, we don't know. Like, maybe someone will be like, here's your home. It's here.
Aww. I would definitely, I don't know, I really liked playing it on Thursday. And I kind of want to play with it some more and see what I think of the format overall. But it kind of seems like all of the decks are evenly matched in their own ways. I mean, they all have, you know, some plus sides and some con sides, but it didn't seem like there was one deck that was, you know, one deck to rule them all. So I think that it would be really fun as a Grand Prix format. I know some people who wouldn't travel to Grand Prix otherwise because they don't follow, you know, Standard and Modern, but maybe this would be something that would kind of bring them out of the woodwork and appeal to some of the kitchen table players who are like, oh, I don't really feel like going to a Grand Prix, you know, that's not really my jam. But maybe they'd be willing to bring their Pauper deck out and just have a good time. So, you know, I think that it'd be a good experience just to get a lot more people the opportunity to come to a Grand Prix without an expensive Standard deck or Modern deck.
Yeah, I would support it being a GP format, you know, for a lot of the reasons that you all said, and also because it kind of breaks the monotony. It's like, you know, we're so used to, you know, Standard, Modern, Legacy, and then Sealed, and that's fine. But it's like, you know, you see archetypes in Pauper that you don't get to see anywhere else. Like, you know, the first time that I dipped my toe into Pauper, I faced something called Kuldatha Control, and it was some bizarre, like, red-white control deck with, like, sends making these little Kifkin things and retracing it over and over again, and it had like main deck Relic of Progenitus and all sorts of weirdness, and I was like, what in slow moving hell is this? And, you know, just things you don't get to see in other formats. Like, you know, we're very familiar with what's popular in Modern, where you have your Abzan Coco and you've got your Infect and you've got your Jeskai Harbinger, and then if you play, you know, Legacy, you're gonna see some Miracles and you're gonna see some, I guess, some Show and Tell. But, you know, when you go into Pauper, these are archetypes you've never seen before that, like Chris said, you know, maybe deserve some love, or, you know, maybe it just breaks up, you know, what we're so used to seeing. You know, Standard right now is dominated by green white tokens. And so if you're tired of looking at all of these other decks, you can tune in to Pauper and it's like a breath of fresh air. And I'm completely for that. And I think that, you know, the possibility of a format, you know, I also, the cost thing is a really good point, because the Modern Open this past weekend at Dallas sold completely out. It had fantastic attendance. 1,000 people showed up. And so if people do want to play a format bad enough, you know, they will pay for it. So I think that the cost would be fine. But, you know, from what I can see, Pauper has a really passionate fan base. And I love being around passionate people. So I think it's something I would play too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would love to see even just more Pauper side events at GPs. I think that would be a great place to start. Or even if, you know, if there could be some kind of a large-scale Pauper event even on Magic Online, that could be a really cool thing, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I also saw, Hallie, that you plugged on your stream, or was it the Community Super League stream? One of them, you plugged the Regs to Riches event that you guys regularly have.
Yeah.
And that would be another thing I think I would like to see more stores do, where it's like, you know, not only is would it support Pauper and get people more interested in Pauper, but if they can also get people more staples so that they can play older formats, it really is just kind of win-win for everybody.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Listener question this week. Send your questions to thegirlfriendbracket@gmail.com. This question comes to us from Lyle. And Lyle says, hi, Aaron, Hallie, Katie, Chris. My name is Lyle, and I'm from Lansing, Illinois. Hey. Midwestern love. My girlfriend Catherine and I have been huge fans of the show. Recently, we've invested into Modern and have been enjoying it for the most part. However, Catherine's been having a rough time getting used to the format and therefore is not having the greatest results at our weekly events. She is playing Grixis Control, and I know several of you are Blue Mages. That's... you guys.
Hello.
Mm-hmm. No. I'm there for the black part. Like, you guys can help her with the counter spells. I'll tell her where to point the kill spells. She's using Grixis Control. I know several of you are Blue Mages, so I was wondering if the Girlfriend Bracket could give her any words of encouragement or advice, whether it is general or specific. Thank you for being great. I'm glad to have you girls back.
Oh, we're glad to be back.
Yeah, we are.
So, having covered a couple Modern tournaments in the last month, I have an interesting perspective on this, because I've watched metagames kind of evolve over several rounds and seen which decks have risen to the top, and it seems like being proactive is kind of like the way to go in Modern right now. Like, I keep hearing people saying Infect is the best deck in Modern. I keep seeing Merfolk win things. Affinity has been really popular, and I think Grixis it's definitely a good deck, and, you know, people who are really seasoned control players can play it very well, but it's at kind of a tough spot in Modern right now, where there are so many different aggro decks that have so many different approaches to being aggressive and are aggressive in so many different ways that it's really hard for a control deck to have a full toolbox to deal with everything. So, unfortunately, I'm not really on the Grixis train right now. Like, if I were to pick up a Modern deck, I would probably play, like, Merfolk or Infect or something like that. But, you know, I think the best way to get into a format that you don't know is to pick a proactive strategy and just try to learn, like, what its lines are and what its strategy is, and learn how to execute that strategy. So that's just some general advice. I'm not sure. Katie, Chris, do you have any, like, specifics about Grixis, or do you feel like, you know, you would rather play something else?
I think that, so for a new Modern player, if this is the only deck available, and you're going to stick with Grixis, I think that Modern is as much learning what all the other decks do as much as learning your own deck. So, you know, after a game, if it was rough and you don't really know what their goal was, like, they won somehow, and you're like, I don't know how we got to this point. You know, ask the person if you can just take a look through their deck, or if they'll explain how it works to you. Because that can be a definite, like, if you know how their deck works, then you can know how to pilot your deck against their deck a little bit better. And another thing to remember with control is patience is a virtue. You have to be, like, the most patient person to play control. You know, knowing your resources, knowing what cards you can draw, knowing how long you can wait to cast them and when you should cast them are all things that come with a lot of repetition. And so if you can learn how to play just a control shell, something specific like Grixis Control will get a lot easier. And I'm sure there's a lot of videos with great people who can kind of walk you through what a control deck is all about, because it's definitely a unique deck to play, and it takes a lot of, like, I really want to kill their guy right now, But I'm not going to. And I'm not going to next turn. And I'm not going to the turn after that. But maybe on the fourth turn, then I'll kill it. So definitely a lot of patience is involved with control.
I can definitely, definitely, definitely agree with that. Before I started being a control player, I played a lot of aggressive decks. That's where I started. And I eventually gravitated toward more control style. And that's just more of what I enjoy. But I think you can learn something from looking at other archetypes and seeing about how you feel about them, see what you can learn from them. And like Katie said, you know, talk to your opponent, talk to them about their deck, ask them how it works. Most people are not going to be like, it's a secret, I'm not going to tell you. Especially if it's like FNM, they're like, oh yeah, this is like totally what I'm doing. Like, I remember the first time I played versus Ad Nauseam, I'm like, well, what the fuck is this Gemstone Cavern for? Okay. And I'm like, they're not doing anything. And then all of a sudden they were like, bleh, and they just like shat their whole deck. And I was like, I'm sorry, what? And it was one of those things. But, you know, learn the metagame at your store. Like, if you're just mostly playing FNM, you know, you kind of get to know so-and-so always plays this deck, so-and-so always plays that deck. And, you know, learn the different decks, learn the different types of decks. I mean, right now I'm playing Red-Green Valakut. You know, I'm working on another project right now that's going to be a Grixis deck, not necessarily Grixis control, but it will have some control elements. And, you know, I want to, like, see the other side of things, you know. I want to play with some black cards, you know. It's not my fave, but I want to see the other side of it. And I want to see, you know, like Katie was talking about, when do you cast, you know, this particular, you know, removal spell? When do you want to counter these things? And Modern is definitely a format that does reward repetition. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, if you find a deck, you enjoy it, stick with it. And if after, you know, maybe this is a long time piloting, maybe I'm full of shit, but like 6 months, you know, try to pilot it for half a year. See how you feel about the deck. You know, I still love Mono Blue Tron. I'll play it all day, air day, you know, but I'm just trying to expand my horizon. Shit, I got Mindslaver locked. Like, I was on the other side of the fence this Friday, and I was like, ooh, this feels bad. I just want to kill you with my lands, and you're slaver locking me. Ugh, was like dagger in my chest. But see, I got to see it from the other side. And, you know, I think you can get better by seeing other perspectives and by playing other decks. If you love Grixis, play Grixis till your eyes bleed. And if it makes you happy, go ahead and do it. And if you discover, you know, maybe I'm not so into this, or even, you know, trade some cards out. Like, maybe you're using, you know, some cards that aren't as good, or maybe you want to try some, like, secret tech or something. You know, mix it up. Make it fun.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think that Modern is a format that rewards knowing your deck as well. My first Modern deck was Living End, and I played that for a year, and I got to a point where I was beating decks that I had no business beating. Like, if you know, there were people that would see me play Living End, see what my opponent is playing, and be like, oh, she's not going to have this. It's a bad matchup. And I was so proficient with the deck that I was able to eke out wins where I really shouldn't have been. And speaking of Living End, and speaking of Grixis even, if you look at the top 8 results from this past Open, Grixis Delver won the Open in Dallas. So Grixis is still quite viable. A young man named Kevin Jones, he was on the Delver of Secrets, Gurmog Angler, Tassiger, you know, play all the instance plan, and he did quite well with it. So I would suggest maybe taking a look at his list and seeing if maybe going in a Grixis Delver direction is your thing. I think if you want to go pure control, I do think Grixis is possible. I do think Jeskai is the better choice because you can play the Nahiri Emrakul plan, which is really popular right now. And so, you know, if you have the means and if you really want to, you know, if you're trying to eke out like the best max win percentage, I think Jeskai is probably the way to go. But, you know, if you're willing to put in the time and the repetition, I think Grixis is still totally viable. You know, even looking at this top 32, Living End came in sixth place. Hey. Look at God at a Modern Open. Eldrazi Taxes came in ninth place. Blue Moon, 13th place. Bogles!
Katie's favorite.
17th. I mean, you know, God was just smiling down on this Open. Ad Nauseam, 25th. Mono Blue Tron, 26th. Yeah. Bant Eldrazi, 28th. You know, these are decks that I think if anybody else were looking at this, they would have, you know, either thought, oh, they're not tier one, they're not whatever. But I'm willing to bet that these pilots knew what they were doing, and that's why they were able to do so well. And so, you know, if Grixis is really where your heart is and you want to keep playing it, be the best damn Grixis player you can be, because you can be that. You know, Chicago, I know so many people in Chicago that love fairies. Fucking love fairies. They will play fairies regardless of how good or bad they are. Fairies hasn't been a tier one or even a tier two deck for how long? And you go to Chicago and these guys rep them some fairies because they love it and they know it so well that they can take down anything that you throw at them. And so they don't really worry about that. And you also know going into those matches that those guys have paid their dues. They've played for ages and that's why they're so good with the deck. And so, you know, it's always very, interesting to me what people consider viable, because so many things are viable. Modern is at its healthiest right now. I think, you know, the other suggestions were good, asking your opponents what you could do differently. But I would just stick with it because I think it's very viable. And I mean, it just won an open. So just keep your head up and keep trucking. Anything else before we wrap up the show?
I have a thing.
You do? Okay.
Yes. I just wanted to put it out there that this week I was watching CSL while I was waiting to pilot our awesome mono black control. And the Magic the Amateuring girls were on, and it was stated that, I think it was Maria, I think her favorite deck is Bogles, and they were playing it in Popper, and I was like, oh girl, no. And the whole time she was commentating, I was just like talking back to her at my computer screen. And she's like, I think it's really fun because of this. And I was like, it's not fun. And she's like, I really enjoy it because of this. And I was like, how do you enjoy it? So I still love and respect them, but I just wanted it thrown out there that I highly disagree with your statements that were made on Thursday.
Oh, no, you didn't.
Oh, I went there.
Oh man, shots this fired. War. We'll have to do like a West Side Story thing where we each have like our finger snaps and we just come for the other. That'd be great. I have something. So I played in a Modern League the other day, just on a whim. I took my Modern Dredge list that I've been pussing around with. I went 3-1 at FNM this week, and I went 3-1 at FNM this week, and it's very cheap to build. It's like $250, you know, which is cheap for Modern. And so I happen to have most of the cards online because of course I do. And so I threw the deck together and I 5-0 at a league.
Sweet.
Completely unexpected. I beat Abzan Company, Kiki Cord, Affinity, Mono Green Stompy, and Jeskai, and I made one guy scoop on turn one.
Yes.
Like, I dredged into just a Narcomoeba and a Prized Amalgam on turn one, which is only four power on turn one. Affinity does way worse. And the minute he saw that, he was just like, no. And I was like, hey, where are you going? And then I was very sad. And that actually happened a couple of times where I would have just a really good turn one, and they would just go. So the deck is real. So if you're playing Modern and you're sleeping on Dredge, don't, because I'm going to come for your ass. And the deck is so much fun. And if this keeps up, I'm totally playing it in Indianapolis because it's just so good. So if anybody's enjoyed listening to the show, how can they find you all and how can they get a hold of you?
So I'm Hallie. You can find me on Twitter at HalCanSan. That's HalCanSan. You can also find me on Snapchat. Also, yes. At HalCanSan. Ooh, and yeah. Maybe you can teach me how to use it, because I have no idea how it works.
And I'm Katie. You can find me on Twitter at MeanMugger. That's MeanMugger. Or you can find me at Twitch. I think I might start streaming Popper soon.
Yes.
Twitch.tv/MeanMuggerMTG or by email, katie.neil14@gmail.com.
And I'm Chris. My Twitter is at TEHKRIZ. My Gmail is YOTEHKRIZ@gmail.com. My Snapchat is Cryptic Command with K's. And my new blog is backtablesmtg.wordpress.com. I will try to update as topics come to my brain meets.
I think you need to trademark brain meats. Like, you need like brain meats keychains, t-shirts. Like, that needs to be your catchphrase. Like, if you're watching Drag Race and they have like purse first, yours needs to be brain meats.
Purse. Oh, I love purse first.
And I'm Erin. You can find me on Twitter at OriginalEstrus. That's OriginalEstrus. You can email me personally at OriginalEstrus@gmail.com. Snapchat, OriginalEstrus. I think that's it. Yeah, that's my Snapchat. I don't even know my Snapchat. I know that I have one. Okay, great. We also teach Hallie and I how to use Snapchat. The show is on Twitter at the GF Bracket. You can email us at thegirlfriendbracket@gmail.com. And you can find us every Friday at gatheringmagic.com, patreon.com/thegirlfriendbracket if you want to support us. We just got our t-shirts made. They look fantastic for our $20 and more sponsors. We will also be kicking off our Google Hangouts again next month, which we weren't able to do for a little while. So if you are a $10 or more patron, you can join us for those. And we will talk to you all next week. Bye-bye.